Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'll endeavor to save 5 minutes for rebuttal. The Secretary does not dispute that in 2007 and in every relevant prior year, she adjusted the standardized amount despite the clear statutory direction to adjust instead the wage index. Nor does she ever deny that she made a mistake in adjusting the purportedly cumulative methodology to adjust the standardized amount by, in each year, subtracting the full amount of the rule floor adjustment, not just the cumulative amount for that particular year, as she should have done under a proper cumulative methodology.
Is your argument about that she should have used a standardized amount, is that properly preserved? Was that made in any of the comments?
Yes, it is
that
properly.
No, that it should have. In other words, that actually the way that she should have done this is not to have used a standardized amount. I understand your argument that the Secretary got it wrong, but did you make the argument that that's the way it had to be done, that she couldn't use the standardized amount?
Well,
none of the comments made that point that I could see.
Well, but the point is, Your Honor, I guess the hospitals never objected to the adjustment of the wage index totally independent of the effect on budget neutrality. And what happened here is the Secretary kind of inexplicably disregarded Congress's direction to adjust the wage index. She did it, though, with an assurance to the regulated community that, don't worry, we're doing the same thing through the standardized amount. Now, it's at the point that the hospitals finally figured out that by disregarding the statutory procedural direction.
I'm confused. But, for example, the June 7th, the letter that was delivered and not accepted, that seems to assume that the standardized amount is the right approach. And the argument is that the problem was that they kept using the standardized approach as it had previously been adjusted downward by the urban floor, right? By the urban adjustment.
Well, again,
I mean, the rural adjustment, excuse me.
The comments took off the undisputed premise that the Secretary did tell the world she was adjusting the standardized amount.
Right.
She also told the world that she was doing it through a cumulative methodology.
Correct.
That would make it equivalent to what Congress directed.
Right.
And what the comments take off on the fact is, wait a second. You are not accomplishing what you set out to accomplish. You are not accomplishing what Congress clearly intended, which is a budget-neutral adjustment.
Right.
And so that's clearly the gravamen of their objection. But they did point out, certainly in the 2008 comments, that when the Secretary herself purported for the first time to do what the statute told her to do, which is to adjust the wage index, at that point, we said, look, you're making essentially two mistakes now.
Right.
As in prior years, you're using the wrong adjustment number. And in 2008, the Secretary seemed to acknowledge that when you make a transition from a cumulative methodology to a non-cumulative methodology, you have to make an adjustment for that. You have to essentially back out the prior adjustments. And the hospitals clearly preserved the objection that, wait, you can't just back out last year. You have to back out all the adjustments. Otherwise, you're not making a proper comparison. And that really preserves, I think, fully all of the objections here. And if you take a step back, there's essentially different kinds of errors that take place in 2007 and 2008.
So your argument is not that the Secretary erred by not making the wage adjustment as opposed to the standardized amount?
Well, I think that's part of our objection, Judge Randolph, because ultimately our point is the main point for focusing on the violation of the statutory direction to adjust the wage index is that makes clear if she'd done that, we wouldn't be here. Because the wage index is calculated anew every year.
But don't you, under your theory, don't you win anyway, even if adjusting the standardized amount was appropriate?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Right. Okay.
The way I think of it, which may not be right.
You don't need this argument that she should only have used the wage index to prevail, correct?
I think that's right. I clearly do not need that. When the Secretary...
I thought you gave it up. Not needed is one thing, but I thought you gave it up in your reply brief.
Oh, well, then you must have written
focusing on this line on page 9, you say our complaint is not that she adjusted the standardized amount instead of the wage index. Our complaint is not that she adjusted the standardized amount instead of the wage index.
Well, I think you're overreading half of one sentence, Your Honor. I think
the rest of it is, and our complaint is not that she used the cumulative methodology.
Well, but, yeah, the gravamen of our complaint, I mean, is she, look, We're not here as sort of interveners for the public interest as a sort of statutory violation objectors group. We're here for hospitals. And as if the secretary came in and said, look, you know, Congress tells me to do the wage index. I'm doing the standardized amount instead. But don't worry, hospitals, you're going to get reimbursed exactly the same. We would not have rushed into court, and we didn't. But at the point we discovered that in violating the first part of the statute, she also violated the second part, which is, again, the way I think about it is there's a procedural direction, here's how you do it, and then there's the substantive guarantee. At the end of the day, what we care about is that she violated the substantive guarantee. And she violated that substantive guarantee in 2007. She violated that substantive guarantee in 2008. The way she did it is slightly different. In 2007, she did it by not doing what she was supposed to, adjusting the wage index. She starts with an adjusted standardized amount that's artificially deflated by a substantial amount. And then, to make matters worse, she also deducts in 2007 the whole amount of the effect of the rule floor when she should have only deducted an incremental amount. 2008's a little different. There, she finally does what the statute tells her to do. She adjusts the wage index. But in making the transition to a non-cumulative system, even she acknowledges, wait a second, I have to make some adjustment for this, because if a non-cumulative system by definition backs out the full amount of the rule floor, so if you start with an adjusted figure that's already backed out the adjustment for the rule floor, you're going to be double counting. So she recognizes this. The problem is she makes a one-year adjustment, but that doesn't make any sense. You have to adjust out all the prior adjustments. And I think one important point to emphasize is that error about not backing out the other adjustments, that would be true even if the secretary had never messed up the math in the prior years. If she'd done the cumulative adjustment absolutely correctly every year, which would have effectively been the first year, you back out the full amount of the rule floor, and then each subsequent year, you back out only the increment. At the point she decides in 2008, I'm switching to a non-cumulative number, she's got to back out those adjustments, and she'd first back out the incremental for 2007, the incremental for 2006, 2005, 2004, so on and so forth, back to the first adjustment where she'd back out the full amount of the rule floor. Otherwise, she would be incorporating in the new non-incremental adjustment prior adjustments for the rule floor, and she would again be double counting.
By the way, how much money are we talking about here? Do we know?
I don't know to a moral certainty, Your Honor, but that's because
the secretary... Can you guess to a moral certainty?
Well,
I mean, are we talking about hundreds of millions of dollars here?
We're talking about a substantial amount of money, Your Honor.
I know it's not on the record, but do you have a sense of what it is?
I have a sense of an order of magnitude that certainly, you know, I would think $100 million, but I have to tell you, I mean, because that's a low number. I think it's probably higher than that. Right. I'm just saying the best we can tell is a guess based on 2007. But one of the things
that... The consequences of you being successful here that this... We would vacate the 07 and 08 rules, and the secretary would issue new ones? Is that the relief you're looking for?
Well, I think what we'd ideally like is an order that essentially directed the secretary to make the correct adjustments. And to
your client?
To our clients, sure.
Is now, state by state?
Yeah.
No, this number is a nationwide number. So this is not sort of a state by state.
But would all hospitals benefit from this, or just the ones you represent?
Any hospital that preserved this objection would benefit. But there's no exception here to the ordinary principles of finality and preservation of objections and the like.
For your remedy going forward, I take it all hospitals would benefit.
Right.
They would, but they would benefit in exactly the way that Congress intended them to benefit, which is budget neutrality.
But under your theory, wouldn't the secretary have to issue new rules to back out the effects of the rural floor adjustment on the standardized rate from previous years?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor. I think for 2007 and 2008, there's preserved objections. She'd have to do that. Now, individual hospitals may have preserved objections to earlier years, but even if they were entitled to...
Well, I'm not talking about going back. I'm talking
right.
about, I mean, suppose for next year, how would... Oh, I see.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize, this is, you know, the secretary kind of makes this sound like it's incredibly complicated. Yeah. The secretary herself has done the exact same thing in the context of a situation where a past mistake created a future overpayment to the hospitals. And we point this out at page 58 of our blue brief. And if you look, I mean, you know, if you have the time, if you actually went and looked at what the proposed rulemaking, which is at 74 CFR 43896, you would see at the end of one of the paragraphs, the math here is not that complicated. What it basically amounts to is a number of calculations over the years. In that calculation, because again, this was overpayments to the hospital, she went back all the way to 1993 and backed out the various numbers, and the math is, you know, basically it's the product of multiplying about eight numbers together, all of which start 0.99 and then get interesting. And the combined effect of that is to make an adjustment.
I must say that if an observer read your or listened to your argument now and then read the district court's opinion, you would think they're two different cases. The district court said that you had presented three issues, and Judge Lambert issued a lengthy opinion. And the first issue was one that in your reply brief you say you're not complaining about anymore, which is the interpretation that any adjustment has to be to the wage aspect of it. The second issue Judge Lambert said you presented was that you failed to give notice, or the secretary failed to give notice of the data used in the calculation of the rural floor adjustment. And the third issue was failure to respond to significant comments. But the argument you're making now about the cumulative methodology and failure to back out, that's not even mentioned in the district court opinion. And so it makes me wonder whether that was even presented to the district court.
It was, Your Honor. And in fairness, you know, Judge Lambert, I don't think fully grasped the difficulty of this case. And one way to illustrating that is he thought by backing out 1 year of 2007 that somehow that mooted the challenge to 2007. Nobody argued that to Judge Lambert. The government doesn't defend that aspect of the ruling. And it's true that in that court we place more emphasis on notice issues because, I mean, you know, and that is part of our objection here. The reason I can't give Judge Tatel a clear answer as to the magnitude of the injury here is the secretary, having botched the math, won't even give us the numbers to check. If they would give us the numbers, which we asked for in the comments, then we'd be able to tell you exactly the magnitude. They haven't even given us that. If I could, I'd like to reserve
I'm sorry, were you done, Ray?
Okay.
You're done? I want to change the subject slightly and ask you about your argument that the secretary failed to respond to the June 7 letter. This is the one, you know, that was...
Sure.
Delivered in the lobby, and okay, that's presented to us, and the district court dealt with it in terms of a motion to supplement the record. Right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But isn't there an antecedent question we have to decide first, which is should the secretary had responded to that comment? I mean, isn't that right? I mean, the question is, was the department's failure to consider that comment appropriate?
Well, I don't think that's the anterior question, Your Honor. I think the anterior question is it part of the record? And if it's part of the record, the failure to respond to it at all presumably is arbitrary and capricious, or maybe not. Maybe there's some justification for it. But the first question is whether it's there at all. And I think that's important in part because there's kind of two reasons in which it being part of the record is important. One, it makes clear that the 2007 objection has been preserved. The second reason it's important, of course, is that it would be important to that particular sort of failure to respond, arbitrary and capricious standard. And, you know, and I'm happy to address it more, but I think one thing to keep in mind here is that because the first question is, should it be in the record? And Judge Lambert said that it is in the record. That's reviewed on an abuse of discretion standard. And I don't see why there's really a serious argument that Judge Lambert abused his discretion on that point.
Well, I suppose the government's argument is that if the notice required that phone number be called, that it's an abuse of discretion to ignore the plain language of the instructions.
But boy, for Judge Lambert to look at something that says "please call" and say, you know, "please" doesn't sound like, you know, letters of direction. And oh, by the way, I would think there'd be a background norm, which is before you ascribe sort of magical qualities to a phone number, that the secretary has to be reasonably clear that if you get the document to the building, but you don't call in advance as requested, that somehow that's going to make your whole comment disappear. I mean, that seems like the kind of thing. Maybe there ought to be some kind of clear statement principle before that kicks in. If there are no further questions, I'll save the balance for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May I please the Court? I'm Jeff Clare, Justice Department Counsel for the Secretary.
Your Honors, the case is indeed in a very different posture on appeal than it was before the district court. In the district court, the plaintiff's primary focus was on the substantive payment standard mandated by the budget neutrality requirement.
And isn't that the same issue before us?
I thought that
that's exactly what the issue is before us.
Oh, it's presented in a very different way.
Well, but that's the issue before us, isn't it?
You haven't claimed a waiver or something.
We have not claimed a waiver. However, the kind of arguments that have been presented in defense of the plaintiff's position were presented in so cursory a fashion below that the district court did not even address them. The district court did not address this argument that the wage index is the only factor that could be adjusted.
But what about the argument that the standardized amount that's currently used contains previous adjustments that reduce the aggregate amount below what would have been but for the rule floor adjustment? Are you telling me? I mean, you don't say in your brief that argument's waived.
We do not, Your Honor.
Okay, so why don't we focus?
What happened at the district court seems of no consequence.
Exactly. So why don't we focus on that? Okay. Why don't you respond to their argument about the standardized? Forget the argument about the wage adjustment and whether they should have done that as opposed to adjust the standardized amount. Why don't you just focus on that?
Very well, Your Honor. The standard that the budget neutrality statute mandates is that adjustments in 1 year, a particular fiscal year under consideration, not yield aggregate payments that are more or less than the payments that would have been made before the adjustments.
Right.
And the plaintiff's contention focus on appeal is that these adjustments can only be effected in a certain fashion by adjusting the wage index. And the logic of that.
No, I said you should drop
theories.
That.
One is follow the statute, which directs you to the wage index. The alternative is, well, if you want to use the standardized amount, do it right.
Right.
Well, let me address.
Produce exactly the same effect as would have been achieved if you'd followed the statute.
Well, let me address the first argument first, Your Honor, that it is the wage index and only the
No, don't address that, okay? I asked you to focus on their alternative argument, that is that, which Judge Williams just described perfectly, which is that the Secretary could use, assume you're right, that it was appropriate for the Secretary to adjust the standardized amount.
Yes, sir.
The argument is she didn't do it correctly.
Right.
That's what we'd like you to focus
and
on.
And that argument, as I understand
And you don't say that's waived, right?
No, we do not.
Okay.
And that argument, as I understand it, is if the adjustment is done correctly, payments that would have been made in the year this statute was enacted, 1997, are in effect the base year, and every subsequent adjustment must ensure that payments are not greater or less than they would have been.
Then the base year?
In 1997, the year the statute was enacted.
I mean, that's true and not true, because there are a lot of other things affecting the standardized amount. So
that's true.
It would have been stupid for Congress to try to make the standardized amount in this provision some kind of unmoving target.
What I meant, Your Honor, is all other factors being equal, the adjustment effect necessitated by this provision.
Well, doesn't that follow arithmetically from a correct reading of the statute?
It does not, Your Honor.
I say that, I mean that, in effect, putting aside all the other impacts on the standardized amount, it will not, on net, be affected by prior applications of this adjustment.
That is not, in our view, what the statute says, Your Honor. What the statute is concerned with is only one thing, the fiscal year that is under consideration.
Yes.
And as so long as the adjustments in that fiscal year do not change the net amount of payments, then the statutory requirement is satisfied.
Okay.
And there was no
to do that right every year.
Right. Which is what the Secretary has done.
You're having no change over the decades from this.
Now, we respectfully disagree, Your Honor. Because
why is that?
Because the statute only talks about the impact on the fiscal year in question.
Okay.
It has no reference back to the year in which the statute
gets recalculated every year.
The wage index does, but this, again, Your Honor's question really goes to the heart of the plaintiff's argument, is that the wage index gets calculated every year and by implication, the budget neutrality adjustment to the wage index that is required by the rural floor adjustment gets adjusted every year.
Right.
And that's simply not so. There is no statutory provision. There is no regulation. There is no administrative practice. There is no precedent that says the budget neutrality adjustment for the rural floor must be carried forward each year in that fashion. Indeed, there are several other budget neutrality.
But the aggregate amount that's paid in any particular year can't be less than that would have been paid but for the rural floor adjustment, right?
In that particular. And,
well, but their argument is that by using the carried over standard amount, which reflects previous year adjustments, it is in fact less than they would get but for the rural floor adjustment.
If that, their argument is that the standard Congress has mandated is the payments must be the same as if this provision had never been enacted. That is the argument the district court
rejected. This is so abstract as to really be almost incomprehensible. Where can I find exactly what the Secretary did with respect to fiscal year 2007? And where can I find exactly what the Secretary did in the calculations for 2008?
Well, Your Honor, every year the Secretary announces a final rule that makes these adjustments, and every year, including in fiscal year 2007 and in the rates starting with fiscal year 2007, the Secretary has made clear that the adjustment, budget neutrality adjustment required by this statute will be made to the standardized amount, and in every year the Secretary has made clear that the adjustments under that statute for prior years will not in fact be backed out of the calculation.
How do we know whether this is cumulative or non-cumulative, or whether the adjustment is taking the prior year's adjustments into account? I mean,
The Secretary has said very clearly that the adjustments before the payments before this adjustment are made are not to be less or greater than the adjustments after that has been.
Let me try. Maybe I can help you answer Judge Randolph's question. Can we simplify the case for a minute? And
yes,
assume, for example, that the standardized amount is $10, okay, and that there are 10 patients in the United States, okay? So the aggregate payment is 100, correct? And that's the amount that can't go up or down based on the rural floor adjustment, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So in year one, let's assume that because of the rural floor adjustment, the hospitals are going to get an additional $10. All right? So what the Secretary did, tell me if this is right, is the Secretary reduced the standardized amount from 10 to 9, right?
Basically, yes, Your
Honor. Okay. Which meant that the hospitals got their $90 through the standardized amount plus the 10. $100, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we agree that's what the Secretary did. Now, in year two, same thing. The hospitals, the rural floor calculation produces an additional $10, right?
Well, there is where I have to disagree, Your Honor, because when you say additional $10.
No, not an additional $10, $10.
Okay, yes, sir.
Okay, right. So what the Secretary did in year two, as I understand it, and tell me if this is right, is that the Secretary took the $90 standardized amount, right, and deducted the 10 from that, so that the hospitals got 80 from the standardized amount plus 10 for the rural adjustment. They got 90, right?
In some senses, yes.
No, that is what happened, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor.
Tell me why. Just focus on that hypothetical.
Okay.
Is that accurate or not?
It's accurate insofar as Your Honor is separating year one from year two and recognizing that each year is a separate determination.
Right.
It doesn't refer back to year one. Year three doesn't refer back to year one.
Right.
Year four doesn't refer back to year one. Year five doesn't refer back to year
but,
one. Year five only refers to adjustments before and after.
I understand, but aren't I right that that's, if you take out all the complexities of this case, that's what happened in year two?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So isn't it true, then, that the $90 the hospital got in year two by having used the $80 standard amount was less than what they would have gotten but for the rural adjustment, because the standardized amount the Secretary used in year two reflected the previous year's rural adjustment?
It is less than they would have gotten in year one.
So the secretary's violating the statute.
Well, here again, Your Honor, the frame of reference.
In fact, let me just finish, and then yes, if you keep my hypothetical going for 10 years,
yes, sir,
the standardized amount goes down to zero.
Well,
and the Congress could not have possibly intended that.
Well, Your Honor, there are
so in year 10, the hospitals would get $10.
Not quite, Your Honor.
No, why not?
Well, first of all, the as we pointed out in our brief, the each year's adjustment to the standardized amount is not added to the following one. It is multiplied, so you don't have this sort of, you know, 100.
Well, either way, it gets reduced. Let me see if I can. This is complicated and really helpful if we could just focus on. Do you agree with me, though, that the standardized amount that's used in a subsequent year has been reduced to some extent?
Absolutely.
And doesn't that therefore produce a aggregate amount that is less than would have been the aggregate amount but for the rural adjustment? Not the rural adjustment in this year, but previous years. In other words,
well, again, there, Your Honor, I disagree. I think
why?
Because it does reduce the amount that would have obtained if the rural floor adjustment had never been enacted in that sense. But the statutory reference is only to the fiscal year under consideration.
That's what I'm focusing on. I'm focusing in on year two. In my hypothetical, in year two, the $90 that they get is less than the $100 they would have gotten if the standardized amount hadn't been reduced by $10 to reflect the previous year's rural adjustment.
No, Your Honor. Perhaps a different example would help clarify.
No. Don't change the example on me. Please.
I'll try and use
Tell me honest. What's wrong with that example.
Because, Your Honor, the example has to start with what are the payments required in year two before the adjustment. It has no reference to year one. And as long as year two
we're going
adjustments
in circles
are.
To see, but the standardized adjustment.
Methodology adopted by the secretary.
Yeah, right. You're using a reduced standardized amount. Yeah.
It has been effective, but the budget neutrality requirement, the substantive standard put into place by Congress for these budget neutrality requirements only looks to the fiscal year under consideration.
But how does budget neutrality requirement apply to adjustments in the standardized amount? On the face of it, it seems to apply only to adjustments in the wage index.
Well, that, Your Honor, refers to what plaintiffs have characterized as their methodological challenge, the means which the adjustment must be affected. And the statute does say adjust the wage index, but because the wage index itself is a factor that adjusts the standardized amount.
But on the face of it does not require adjustments to the standardized amount to be budget neutral.
Well, Your Honor, the substantive standard is in the requirement that adjustments of aggregate payments before the adjustment not be less than or greater than payments that would have been made in the fiscal year without the adjustment. And as we've argued in our brief and as the district court concluded, that the fiscal year refers solely to the fiscal year under consideration.
That's
in other
not
words,
4410B, is it, you're talking about?
It is.
What provision are you talking about?
The provisions quoted at page 8 of our brief, it's 4410. A is the substantive standard, and B is the means, it refers to the manner in which the adjustment shall be made.
See what?
I'm sorry, I misspoke, Your Honor. It is 4410B at the bottom paragraph of page 8.
But that's only referring to the wage index. Adjustments to the wage index shall be done in the following manner.
Right.
But your answers to Judge Tatel, you were talking about using that same idea for the standardized amount adjustments.
I'm distinguishing between the substantive standard that must be maintained and the manner of effecting the adjustment. It's our contention that the substantive standard that must be maintained refers only to the fiscal year under consideration.
Look,
and that the manner of the adjustment in the statute talks about the wage index, but because the wage index is not something that is like hermetically sealed from the standardized amount.
I'd like to hear the hypothetical that you were going to use to answer Judge Tatel's hypothetical.
Well, the hypothetical is that you look only to the payments that would be required in the fiscal year under consideration.
Suppose you do that right, year after year. Is there any cumulative impact from prior years affecting, as a result of this section, is there any cumulative impact on the amount that hospitals get reimbursed?
Yes, as we've argued.
Why is that?
Because in the standard, if the
way you're holding constant year after year after year, it seems odd that when you accumulate that, suddenly, brrrp, it's a substantial reduction.
Well, every other budget neutrality requirement, which the statute requires, is to a standardized amount. And because the standardized amount is carried forward, there is this ratcheting down of the standardized amount that must serve as the point of departure. And in that sense,
is there something
the next
in the statute that requires
it? Yes.
What?
The statutory provision that requires the standardized amount be carried forward, and I apologize for the alphabet soup here, is 42 U.S.C., 1395 WW subsection D 3 big H.
But does it require
standardized amount?
Yes.
Right, but what about the? Is there anything that requires the adjusted standardized amount to be carried forward? That's what I asked you.
Yes, Your Honor, because the statute makes clear that the in calculating this year's reimbursement, but before some adjustments that aren't an issue here, the prior year's standardized amount serves as the point of departure.
Okay. I'll just go back to the point I still don't understand, and then I think Judge Randolph's question is a good one. I'd like to hear your hypothetical. But I agree with you that it focuses on the fiscal year at issue. I got that. Okay?
Yes, sir.
But it seems to me that by not readjusting the standardized rate to back out last year or the previous year rule adjustments, then quote, I'm quoting from the statute here, then the aggregate amount in that fiscal year would be less than those that would have been made in the year if the Rule 4 had not applied.
Well, again, Your Honor, the question is which year is in the year referring to?
Right, but
so
the
long
result
as
of
is,
this, but the result of your approach is that the aggregate amount is slowly going down, right?
Then, well, other things being equal, because
yes,
the
aggregate
amount
will slowly go down.
Yes, but the statutory requirement
in other words,
is the statute. Let me put this another
why would
way.
Congress,
the statute
is budget neutral.
It is budget neutral with respect to the fiscal year in question.
But it's not
that
budget
is
neutral over a period of time.
That is true, but that is not what the statute requires.
But why would Congress have adopted a fix that slowly over time reduced aggregate payments?
Well, this is part of the Balanced Budget Act of 1997, a statute enacted in response to a deep congressional concern about the unrestrained growth in Medicare expenditures. In our view, Your Honor, the statute works this way. It looks only at the fiscal year in question. Okay. It is as silent with respect to what impact that may have on the aggregate reimbursement that would have been made in subsequent. It simply imposes no limitation, and that it's reasonable for the Secretary to take this discretion and to construe it in a manner.
Okay, so what's your hypothetical that
explains that? Your Honor, let me take the car example, the compensation example that the plaintiffs have used in their brief. Suppose someone is paid $10 an hour in compensation, and the employer says, I'm going to give you a car allowance, except that your total compensation can't equal or be more or less than the amount of compensation you would have received in the absence of the car allowance. In our view, that only looks at each employment year. If you're paid $10 in hourly compensation and you get a car allowance of $2 that year, then the hourly compensation is reduced to $8. If in the next year you're paid $15 an hour and the value of the car compensation is $3, then your hourly rate is $12 in cash and $3.
That's exactly the way this would work out here if the Secretary had followed the words of the statute. I mean, I know that's...
Well, again, Your Honor, we submit that that is what the Secretary has done, that it is only looking
claimed by the Secretary. The Secretary adjusted the wage amount. The Secretary left to the standardized amount.
Well, we clearly have adjusted the standardized amount. It is our contention that when the statute refers to the adjustments of the wage index, because the wage index is really, if you look at the statute, itself an adjustment of the standardized amount.
I want to go back to a question I asked you earlier, because I don't know that I'm really satisfied with your answer.
Yes,
and maybe you can expand on it, and I'll ask Mr. Clement the same question. All of this argument deals with most of the argument deals with the question about making these standardized cost adjustments year after year and accumulating, and that violates the principle of the budget neutrality. I mean, that's what we're swirling about, right? The problem I have is that the principle of budget neutrality doesn't say anything about adjusting the standardized amount. It only deals with the wage index. And if I read this statute, for what it's worth, it says, okay, if you're going to adjust the wage index, here's how you have to do it. It's got to be budget neutral. But that doesn't tell me anything about whether something has to be budget neutral for the standardized amount adjustment.
Well, Your Honor, let me respond in three ways. First, not to belabor the point, but it's our contention that because the wage index is itself an adjustment of the standardized amount, the Secretary has discretion to do that. Secondly, the logic of plaintiff's argument.
To do what?
To adjust the standardized amount.
I'm not questioning that. What I am questioning is when the Secretary adjusts the standardized amount, why it has to be budget neutral when the statute says no such thing.
Well, Your Honor, as we understand the statute, what the statute requires is that in the year under consideration, whatever adjustments the Secretary makes, whatever manner the Secretary chooses to make the adjustment, the additional expenses, payments that are necessitated by the rural floor adjustment have to be offset by a compensating adjustment so that in the fiscal year in question, the net payment effect is the same. But only with respect to that fiscal year. If the Secretary employs a methodology that in effect means your point of departure for the next year is a lower standardized amount, that is simply something that the statute does not speak to. The statute neither expressly authorizes it nor bars.
I don't see how the statute speaks to standardized cost adjustment at all.
Well, again, Your Honor, I don't wish to belabor the point, but because the wage index is itself a factor that adjusts the standard.
It's a factor, but it's not the same factor.
Well, the only reason this makes a difference in plaintiff's argument is it's their contention that a budget neutrality adjustment to the wage index is never carried forward, that the statute somehow bars that. And the statute says no such thing.
The wage index is recalculated each year. Is that
yes, but the budget
neutrality. So if you follow the literal boring words of the statute, this would happen automatically.
No, Your Honor, because that is only the wage index, not a budget neutrality adjustment.
The wage index, suitably adjusted for budget neutrality, gets plugged into the standardized amount. The sequence seems to be critical.
Well, again, Your Honor, the budget neutrality, when the Secretary makes a budget neutrality adjustment, if the Secretary had made that adjustment to the wage index and calculated the amount of the adjustment that is necessary in 1 year, there is nothing in the statute that says that adjustment has to be backed out and the Secretary.
It's automatic because the wage index is recalculated.
But again, Your Honor, refers to the wage index, not the adjustment to the wage index. In the same way that other budget neutrality adjustments, like those for the diagnostic related groups, or the annual updates to the wages.
You mentioned that at an early stage in your argument, and you didn't cite particular provisions, but if you wanted, that would be great. But I take it those are adjustments under other statutes which mandate, quote, budget neutrality in quite different terms. That's, if I'm understanding you correctly, they refer to budget neutrality as applied directly to something which is cumulative.
Well, actually, Your Honor, the two adjustments I've referred to, one, the DRG weight adjustments, that's at subsection D4C, little 3, for example, they really don't specify anything. They say in a manner that the Secretary shall determine.
Do you agree with the formula that is presented on page 6 of the petitioner or plaintiff's brief, the top?
Yes, Your Honor. We do, Your Honor. I've much exceeded.
But I have a couple more questions.
Yes, Your Honor.
Just two real quick. We were just talking about this, the Budget Act here, and I don't even understand it. Maybe you can explain. It says the Secretary shall adjust the area wage index referred to in sub A, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
For hospitals not described in such subsection, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. But the hospitals not described in subsection A?
I think I follow your...
Isn't that both rural and urban?
Yes, Your Honor.
What sense does this statute... I don't even understand the statute.
Well, Your Honor, the Secretary, Your Honor, raises an excellent point, and this is something that's addressed at length in the Secretary's 2008 rulemaking that's at issue here, that basically the objective of the statute is to bring certain hospitals up to the floor that rural hospitals are paid. But what it says is that the offsetting adjustment that is made to compensate for that additional expenditure must be taken out of every other hospital's payment that doesn't get the benefit of the adjustment. And if you follow that literally, instead of having the rural hospitals being the floor, they would wind up being paid less than the hospitals that get the benefit of the adjustment. And so if you actually applied the statute literally, you would defeat the objective of the statute. And so what the Secretary did in the 2008 rulemaking was solicit comments on an adjustment that would, notwithstanding the plain language of the statute, be applied to all hospitals, not simply the non-beneficiaries of the rural floor adjustment. And all the commentators agreed, well, because that benefits us, in that instance, the Secretary doesn't have to follow the literal language of the statute.
So that's why they used the standardized amount.
That is okay. Certainly a powerful reason why the Secretary could not follow the literal language of the statute and accomplish.
One other question on a completely different subject.
Yes, Your Honor.
With respect to this June 7 comment that's the subject of the motion to supplement the record.
Yes, Your Honor.
This affidavit that's at Joint Appendix 89 by CERN, she tells us that this wasn't her responsibility to accept things like this, but she never says in the affidavit what she did with it. Do we know?
We don't know, Your Honor, and that really is in a large measure our point here. Now, I want to stress that our objection to
Do you think it's likely that she just threw it away?
I think what's likely is that she took the package not realizing that it was a comment, that somehow it got lost somewhere in the agency. And I want to stress, Your Honor, a couple points. If the comment had been submitted in accordance with the agency's procedures and the agency had lost it, then certainly the agency is charged with that error in the comment.
Remember, we're reviewing the district court's decision for abuse of discretion, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so make your argument in terms of why what the district court did was not just wrong as far as you think, but an actual abuse of discretion.
Because, Your Honor, the agency has to have, in a complicated rulemaking done on a very compressed time schedule where the agency is receiving thousands of comments, in order to assure that they are properly coordinated, in order to ensure that they are not, in fact, lost, in order to ensure a reasonable opportunity to respond to them. The Secretary, all agencies, have to have some latitude to prescribe reasonable, easy to follow means of submitting comments to the agency. And they were not followed here. And I want to stress to Your Honors that this is not simply a technical objection. Had the plaintiffs not followed these procedures and the comments reached the appropriate people and been considered, we would not be arguing that because of this technical defect in the way the comments were submitted, they can no longer be deemed part of the record. In this case, however, the thing that the agency's procedures were designed to prevent, in fact, happened. The comments were not rooted appropriately. They didn't reach the people who were considering the rulemaking. And the district courts...
Because we don't know that from the record in this case.
You're making,
right?
You're making an assertion
we don't know
about
that.
The effect of the unmade phone call.
Right.
And there's nothing in the record as to what happens when people call that number.
Well, the presumption of regularity is that if the procedures are followed, are prescribed and they're followed, they will reach the appropriate
people. But you're making, in effect, an argument that this telephone system is really important backup, but as you say, we rely that proposition entirely on the presumption of regularity.
But you have to. You have to, unless you're going to engage in fact-finding and discovery.
Right.
You're stuck with a record. So you're arguing from the administrative record, and that's the point of this.
Right. And one of the problems with the district court's approach, Your Honor, is it invites this kind of collateral evidentiary proceeding and this sort of war of affidavits as to what happened. And again, had the comments reached the rulemaking staff, we wouldn't be making this argument.
My point is, we don't know that from this record. You're assuming that. All her affidavit says is that it wasn't her responsibility. She didn't say. I mean, you could look at this record and. It's, one view is she threw it out, another view is got lost, and a third possibility is she gave it to the right people and they said, look, they didn't call the phone number, so we're not going to consider it. We don't know the answer to any of those, do we?
Well, what you have in that circumstance...
Isn't that right?
What you have in that circumstance, Your Honor, is the presumption of regularity of agency procedures, that the agency didn't just simply throw them away, that the agency acted as it...
If we don't think this is an abuse of discretion, then we have to remand for the agency to respond to this, don't we? At least the 07... regulation, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, right.
That is correct. Your Honor, I'm way over my
yes,
time.
Yes, I did want to. Took you over. That's okay.
Your Honor, I have one
question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Most of your brief talking about retroactive remedies acts as if the petition plaintiffs were asking for reimbursements for underpayments in a whole bunch of years prior to 2007, but you know as well as we do that that is not the case. So what in effect is your anti-retroactivity argument for getting the number right for, let's say, 2008 or 2010?
Well, Your Honor, the way the claim was presented is that the adjustment to the standardized amount, let me back up a step. Fiscal 2007 is challenged by the plaintiffs. Their claim here is that the adjustment made to the standardized amount for that year is incorrect and that the adjustment must therefore be reversed and vacated. That's fine. They can make that argument in 2007. Okay. What they also want to argue is that every adjustment for every prior year to the standardized amount is unlawful.
But that's not to recover retroactive payments for the prior years, but to ensure that the payments for future years are accurate.
Well,
that's
for future
their argument.
Years, for future years, because in 2008 the system has changed.
No, but under their theory, it hasn't. Their view is that the... Well, let me ask you this. Well, Let's assume for a minute that we thought that the Secretary was wrong to have not backed the urban floor adjustments out of the standardized rate. Just assume that that's our ruling, okay? Then it wouldn't be retroactive, right? It wouldn't be retroactive, right, to require that to be done to ensure that future payments are budget neutral.
Well, Your Honor, in order to accomplish that, the Secretary would have to go back and undo the adjustment to the standardized amount.
Correct.
Every prior year.
But
and
in order to provide prospective relief.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
In order to ensure accurate prospective relief.
Because even for prospective changes in the standardized amount, you would be saying the adjustment in 2006 and the adjustment in 2005 and the adjustment in 2004 were incorrect. You would be disturbing You'd be disturbing the finality of each final determination of the standardized amount. Yeah. In the context of a statute that requires that the prior year's standardized amount serve as the basis for the next one.
That works for your whatever finality defenses you have with respect to hospitals seeking reimbursements for, let's say, 1999, but it's hard to see how it has any relation at all to calculating the amount correctly for 2010.
Well, again, Your Honor, suppose let's take 2011. Suppose the same argument is made with respect to 2011,
right,
that the standardized amounts determine the adjustments to the standardized amount in every year since the statute was enacted are incorrect and must be backed out. In order to afford that relief, you have to go back and undo the adjustment to the standardized amount in every prior year in the context of a statute that requires the standardized amount from a prior year be brought forward. This goes to the heart of our retroactivity argument, Your Honor. The standardized amount is a key indicator a key price signal of what Medicare is going to pay. It's a key indicator to Congress. It's a key indicator to the Secretary. It's a key indicator to the hospitals that rely on Medicare payments.
Okay.
And to undo that for prior years has a substantial retroactive effect. And Your Honor did ask about the magnitude of
yeah.
this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What do you think?
We don't know exactly. Agency counsel blanched at this question when I asked and said the B word has been used with respect to that. It's a number with a lot of zeros on it.
Okay.
Now, I know plaintiffs are going to say that's what we were entitled to. But what we're going to say is that right or wrong, Congress relies on these determinations that the Secretary has made. It relies on them for planning purposes.
Well, but Congress also, I mean, I don't think that gets you anywhere, because Congress also relies on the proposition that the Secretary does it accurately.
Right, but whether Congress understands the minutiae of these calculations.
Well, they
Congress
may not, but they certainly would assume that the Secretary's implement, and I'm not saying that the Secretary didn't do it accurately here, but it doesn't seem to me that you get very far with an argument that the Congress doesn't really care whether the Secretary follows its statutes accurately or not.
That's certainly not sure
that future, that any problems in the past are not corrected in the future. That can't be right.
But, Your Honor, Congress does plan on the basis of the final numbers that are advanced.
Okay. Right. Okay. Well, you're way over. So.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Did Mr. Clemens have any more time?
2 minutes.
Okay. Good.
Thank you, Your Honor. If I could start with the year-to-year red herring, if you will. I mean, if we were here trying to get in 2007 or 2008 all of the benefits that we'd been denied in prior years, maybe the fact that the statute focuses on a fiscal year at a time might make some difference. But what we're trying to do is get back the money we were wrongly denied in 2007 and in 2008. Now, in 2007, we were denied it in two steps. First, they took an adjusted standardized amount that was artificially deflated. That injured us one quantum, and then they subsequently injured us again by deducting the full amount of the rule floor out instead of the increment. 2008, different year, we're injured in another way, which is they take over this adjusted standardized amount. They then voluntarily back out 1 year's adjustment. And that's important, Your Honor, because it gives the lie to this idea that every year is absolutely taken on its own and the standardized amount is handed down from God and is sacrosanct and they can't make any adjustment. Because they made an adjustment. They just made the wrong adjustment. They backed out 1 year, 2007, which is incoherent. If you're going to make an adjustment from the cumulative system to the non-cumulative system, you got to back out all the years. And if you do that, we're entitled to relief in 2007, 2008, and it does have the incidental benefit of prospectively, we'll no longer be carrying over this error, which denies Congress's substantive objective, which was budget neutrality.
Are these hospitals, the five that you represent, are they rural hospitals?
To be honest, I think they're a mix, but I got to double check that for you, Your Honor.
What's your precise response to counsel's argument that the statute requires the standardized amount to be carried forward?
Well, first of all, to the extent he is tying that to some statute or something, I think that is an argument that's been waived, because I haven't seen that argument before. But my second part of the answer is, why was the standardized amount carried over in this context? It wasn't because Congress told them to. They carried it over voluntarily in order to make the budget neutrality adjustment through the standardized amount. When they do that as part of their budget neutrality adjustment for the rule floor adjustment for a particular year, they're not excused from the errors they make in that process. Even if they were required to bring over that number, they brought over a number that injured us, and we're entitled to compensation for that.
The standardized amount consists of what?
The standardized amount is a number. And so,
I know it's a number, but what is it? How do you get to that number?
You get to that number, I mean, it's a calculation that's made. It's adjusted based on a variety of different statutory factors.
I thought it was basically the average operating costs of hospitals when the prospective payment system was put into effect.
Yeah, with the wage factors kind of taken out a little bit, and also with understanding that that might be for the average condition, which is why you have the DRG, which gives you more money if it's a more serious condition and less money if it's a less serious condition.
And there are other adjustments that are made. Once you get that base, the base is the average operating cost of the hospital, then there there are adjustments made to that. What are those other adjustments?
There's a whole number of different factors, Your Honor. I can't tell you all of them. If it's helpful to you, I can get that.
Can you tell me one of them?
Other adjustments to the standardized amount. I'm not sure I can. I'm sorry. I'm focused on the case in front of me, Your Honor. I'm happy to get that for you. But the point is, yeah, they're adjusted by a bunch of different things.
The case in front of us deals with your claim that the standardized amount was not properly adjusted, that it was carried forward from one year to the next. Now, the carry forward part of it is necessary under the statute because the statute mandates that the standardized amount be the average operating costs of the hospital as it existed in the at the time the prepayment system was put into effect in 1984. You've got to carry that forward because the statute requires it. There are other adjustments, but you can't tell me what they are. And so how are we to decide whether the adjustments were correctly made or not correct?
The reason I can't tell you about those other ones is they have nothing to do with this case. 4410 does two things, Your Honor. It says give a rule floor adjustment that's going to give a monetary benefit to some urban hospitals.
When you adjust the wage index.
No, 4410A doesn't say anything about the wage index. It says make a rule floor adjustment, okay? Now, when you make the rule floor adjustment, everybody understands that what that's going to do is give certain urban hospitals, it's a benefit to them. They're going to get more money. What Congress said in 4410B is make sure that this provision, the rule floor adjustment, which gives some urban hospitals more money, is not going to have a net effect on the budget, on the aggregate payments. They tell you to do it through the wage index, but there's nothing in there that really moors budget neutrality to the idea of the wage index. It's clear what's supposed to be budget neutral is the rule floor adjustment. And the problem with their position is that because of the methodology that they use, and they deviated from the statute, and bad things happen when you deviate from the statute because other parts of the statute don't work that well together. You know, they want to focus on this within the year language, but of course that's tied to the adjustment to the wage index, and if you do that, of course it's going to be within the year. But they deviate voluntarily.
I think you misspoke because 4410A only talks about the wage index.
Of the hospitals that are going to benefit. I misspoke when I said it doesn't mention the wage index at all.
Your argument is focusing on the standardized amount, and the statute doesn't even deal with it.
Well, the fact that they completely deviated from the statute doesn't seem like it harms my argument, Your Honor, and I do think these arguments are joined. But what I would say is, if I could, what A talks about is an adjustment to the wage index that benefits the urban hospitals. It's a rule floor adjustment. Those hospitals are going to benefit. What B talks about, the methodology is adjust the wage index. But the guts of it, the substantive requirement, is make sure that since we've just handed out some gratuitous money to some urban hospitals, let's make sure we get that back in a way that makes this whole thing budget neutral. And it makes it clear, it's neutrality that works both ways. This was not, let's figure out a way to get some underpayments to the hospitals because that'll help us balance the budget. No, it says they should be no more or no less. And the Secretary's problem is, they have a position that they admit that systematically made the secretary save money, underpaid the hospitals, and there's no justification for that. The statute was supposed to have budget neutrality, not savings to the secretary.
Could you just quickly respond to Mr. Clare's last argument about this June 7 letter and that the reason the district court, according to the government's position, the reason the district court's granted the motion to supplement was an abuse of discretion is because agencies just, you know, they get thousands of comments, they've got to have clear procedures, and if people don't follow the procedures, then that's just too bad.
Well, as you say, Your Honor, I mean, I don't think that amounts to an abuse of discretion. He seems to say, well, if you'd followed the statute but we'd gotten it anyways, that would be good. If the converse, it would be good, but somehow you combine both of those, and there's an abuse of discretion. And I don't see that, Your Honor. And to your point about, you know, one thing we don't have in this record is an actual affidavit that says, and we never got it, it never went anywhere. And that would be bad enough in a normal case. But here, whether it was the letter or the email, something got through. And the way we know that is in 2008, the secretary comes out of the gate with a proposed rulemaking, and she's going to change her methodology. Well, where did that come from? It had to come from either the comment they received in 2007 or the email they received in 2007. So if their argument boils down to there was a procedural foot fault and we didn't get the substance of the complaint, it's wrong. They got the substance of the complaint. And maybe they got it from the email and not from the letter. But one way or another, they got the substance of the complaint. Otherwise, there's no explanation for why the secretary, after adjusting the wrong factor for a decade, comes out in the 2008 Notice of Proposed Rulemaking and says, guess what? We're going to do this completely different.
When the 2007 rulemaking ended, did you or your clients or anyone on behalf of your clients correspond with the secretary complaining that there was no response to the email or the letter?
Well, we pursued that issue in court, yes, Your Honor.
Was that before the 2008 rulemaking?
I'm not sure.
Well, suppose it was.
Well, suppose it was, then maybe my argument's not as great as I thought it was, Your Honor. But I don't know the answer to that. But
your argument
sounds
a little bit like, hey, they did respond to our comments.
In 2008.
You're late.
In 2008. Without providing any remedy in 2007. Now, that certainly can't get it done.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Anything else? Thank you. Case is submitted.